I'm thankful for this opportunity that Marnie and Andrew have graciously allowed me to be the one to begin our time of reflection together this evening. And I'm thankful that I get to begin the reflection on this text, which I love, and which is maybe among my favorites of all gospel texts. And it is the gospel text with the famous catchphrase, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's." And I want to begin by saying that this is not a story about the separation of church and state, and nor is this a story in which Jesus advises us to be good citizens and pay our taxes. Rather, at least as you have it from me, this is a story about empires colliding, or at least it's a story about the Roman Empire colliding with the upstart anti-empire that Jesus referred to, ironically, as the kingdom of God. It's a story about economics, definitely, and in particular, it's the story about a rural teacher who issues a clever, subtle, and radically subversive challenge to a dominant imperial economic paradigm. You see, Jesus spent most of his ministry in rural Galilee. It's a tough word to pronounce clearly. Rural Galilee, among peasants, agrarians, people whose livelihoods came from their land and their labor. Out there in the country, people didn't really deal much with money. They grew what they needed, and if they couldn't grow it, they'd trade for it with their neighbors. A typical family might have had a few coins, but these would have been the small bronze coins printed by local rulers, past or present. By and large, the only economy these people knew or cared about, or cared to know, was how to manage their household and how to trust God for a bountiful harvest. Now, it's possible that this simple rural economy was beginning to change in Jesus' day. It's possible that under the rule of Herod Antipas, the peasants of Galilee were feeling some pressure to exchange their crops for money, which could in turn be collected as taxes to line the pockets of the ruling classes. But my personal hunch is that even if indeed these rural Galileans were being pressured to monetize their economy in order to pay tributes to Rome, my hunch is that Jesus encouraged tax evasion. After all, Jesus preached the kingdom of God, an upside-down economy in which the first are last, where it's better to give than to receive, and where treasure is stored not on earth, but in heaven. Faced with an imperial economy that channeled wealth from the hands of impoverished peasant masses into the storehouses of the few wealthy elites, Jesus would almost certainly have told his Galilean compatriots to withhold their tribute. Besides, in rural Galilee, who would have noticed? But in the story we heard read today, Jesus isn't in Galilee. He's in the southern province, in the capital, Jerusalem, in the seat of political and economic power. Down here, Rome's presence is real. Down here, you don't openly encourage tax evasion and live to tell about it. The Herodians, they're the ones who collude to try to trap Jesus in our story today. They know all this. They're collaborators with the empire, and so perhaps they've heard these rumors of Jesus and his anti-imperial sentiments. They know about his peasant sympathies. Maybe they even saw him upturning tables at the temple, and so they know that he's against elitist economics. And as elites themselves, they feel threatened. So they approach Jesus, and they start with false flattery. "Teacher, man of integrity," they say, as if they believe it. "Is it right to pay the tribute? Go on, Jesus, say what you really think. We dare you." But Jesus won't bite. "Show me the coin used to pay the tribute," he says. "Show me the coin." Jesus here, we notice, doesn't himself traffic in the imperial coin. He doesn't have any on him. So the Herodians are the ones who have to go and get it for him. So they bring it to him, and it turns out to be a denarius. So this isn't the lowly bronze coin of the peasant Galileans. This is a shiny piece of imperial silver. I picture Jesus taking the coin and turning it over in his hand. Maybe this is the very first time he's ever held such a coin. Or maybe he just pretends it is because he looks at the imprint on it of the most recognizable face of the most powerful man in the world. And he says, perhaps with a smirk, "Who's that guy? Whose picture is this? And whose inscription?" And of course they tell him it's Caesar's, and Jesus is ready with his reply. "Then give it back to Caesar, and give to God what is God's." The Herodians are amazed, and I imagine they're infuriated by Jesus' cleverness. By saying so little, Jesus says so much. To my ears, he says, in effect, Caesar can have his shiny medal. He can have his economic fantasies. He can have his illusions of dominance and pretensions of control. But give to God what is God's. Let Caesar keep his coins, God will have the rest. I don't believe in your empire or its fraudulent economics. In my God's kingdom, the rules are different. In my God's kingdom, gifts rendered to God are returned as care for the people of the land. In my God's kingdom, the economy works for the flourishing of the whole earth. You ask me if it's right to pay the tribute? I tell you, your ethical, economic imagination is way too small. And this is why I love the story so, so much. Jesus refuses to give moral credence to the economy of empire. Jesus recognized that however big Caesar thinks his economy is, it's false and small. This Roman system that makes the rich richer, that exploits labor, that devalues the earth, it's no economy at all. It's but a sad and pale imitation of the great economy of God, the one premised on Psalm 24, where it says, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Give to God what is God's indeed." The kingdom economy starts here. If you're like me, you'll have this crazy notion that this is all still so relevant. If you're like me, you'll share this wild belief that the economics of God's kingdom have something to offer us in an age when elite economics come in the guise of global free markets, when the wealth of the many is consumed by so few. We may not call it empire, but our dominant economic paradigm is at least as dangerous as Rome's, and at least as offensive to the great economy of the kingdom. So I, for one, am convinced and compelled by Jesus' attitude and by his simple, subversive saying. I, for one, feel the need for a reorientation of my economic imagination, and the words of Jesus echo in my ears as if they've just been spoken. Sure, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, but give to God what is God's.